This is episode number 799 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about The Punisher, Funko, and Big Hero 6. Our comics this week will be Action Comics number 989, Ms. Marvel number 22, and Amazing Spider-Man number 789. And our Out of the Long Box comes back this week with a Halloween-themed comic, Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose number 1.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you.
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
And welcome, everybody, to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendre here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
Doing well, but you said something that kind of shook me a little bit. $7.99.
$7.99, my friend.
Yeah, this is weird.
The penultimate episode of Secret Identity.
This is weird.
You know what's going to be not weird?
What?
It's going to be just like the last episode and just like the next episode of Secret Identity.
It is.
You know, we're like, you're going to get a prize in every box of Cracker Jacks, Matthew.
Yes.
And that prize is solid gold ear candy.
If you have liked McDonald's cheeseburger since the day you ever had one as a
formula.
Kid, haven't changed much
nope.
Like them.
We're not doing Coke Zero Sugar now. We're doing Coke Zero
what
all the way
stupid
through.
Stupid name.
God, so mad about that.
It is dumb.
That was my favorite version
of
Coca-Cola.
Did they change the formula?
I think that it tastes slightly different. I don't know if they scientifically changed it or whatever, but I'm not a fan of it.
Soda without sugar is not even nothing.
But that
for me.
Was the thing about Coke Zero is Coke Zero was like the closest to
really
tasting like actual Coca-Cola than anything else. Like with Diet Coke and with pretty much all diet sodas, you get that like aspartame
yes.
taste that sort of you didn't have that with Coke Zero. They
oh,
did
wow.
something there. The extra chemicals they put in it like made your brain think that it was actually Coca-Cola. And then they went and messed with it.
Yep.
Why you got to do that?
And they added letters. Usually you shorten a name.
Thank you.
That was the thing that really kind of
yes.
shook me. Like,
let's make the brand longer.
Yeah, we're not going to call it Coke Zero anymore. We're going to call it Coke Zero Sugar.
Right.
It's like the Los Angeles Angels of
Pretty
Anaheim.
Pretty sure the zero got the point across.
It did.
It worked on multiple levels. There's yeah. zero sugar. There's zero calories.
Zero is...
Zero if, reasons to read the label.
If you see zero on anything, you know you're not going to get a lot of extra stuff in it.
Right.
This contains zero.
It contains nothing.
Good. Perfect.
Now it contains just no sugar. I don't know. Does it have other stuff in it now? Who's to say? Needless to say, we are not changing the formula of Secret Identity for the last two episodes.
Yes.
We are going to keep giving you Secret Identity Zero.
That's it.
That's what you're going to get. So let's start off with our news. And we finally know when The Punisher is going to be arriving. Netflix announced last week now as we record this that Friday, November 17th will be the launch date for the 13-episode season of The Punisher. The 13-episode series is set to establish Castle's own place in the Netflix Marvel universe, giving viewers a better opportunity to get to know Castle more as a man than just a killing machine. For series lead Jon Bernthal, this season is about Frank trying to open up more and care more for those around him. But the Punisher aspect of him is something Frank is going to find himself having to lean on once again. And he says, Matthew, during this show, nobody is who they appear to be. The season is much darker as it goes, and it gets darker and darker and more visceral. The show takes you on this journey of Frank becoming more and more human again, and then shutting off and going back to what works for him and the place where he kind of belongs. And I think that's a place of solitude and of darkness and of destruction. It's going to get into as dark and brutal a place as you've ever seen in the Marvel world. I can promise you that.
Mm.
So it seems like it's going to be that seesaw effect of him trying to be more of a human being and then falling more into the this is what I have
yeah.
to do sort of mentality. So I'm really, really hopeful for that show. I really hope that it delivers on what I thought were some fantastic moments of The Punisher in the Daredevil season. So I'm really looking forward to it.
I've not even seen the second season of Daredevil. I saw the first couple episodes
what?
And that was it. I'm so – my DVR queue is so full. And I don't even know what's going on.
I mean, I'm yelling at you, but I haven't finished Iron Fist yet, and I haven't watched any of The Defenders, and I didn't finish Luke Cage either.
Nope.
So, yeah, I definitely fell off of that. It's too much.
That's the problem.
It's all too much, Matthew.
I don't like when you release everything at once.
We're retiring.
Yeah, don't drop the season. Just drop an episode.
That's why we're getting out of this. But we can't keep up anymore. We're not young whippersnappers.
We can't
read every comic that comes out. We can't watch every episode of every television show that comes out. We just can't keep up the pace anymore, Matthew.
Especially during sports seasons. It's tough.
That's true, because my go-to is sports.
That's always what it is for me.
You know, now I know you're not a big NBA guy, but as we record this, and we're not bringing back the Sporting Minute, although that is very secret identity, the NBA season has begun.
Yep.
We are in the midst of the NFL season. The baseball playoffs are wrapping up. I know you don't want to talk about that.
Or as I call about it, the season's over.
The season is over. But for us here in the Northeast, the Yankees, right? I mean, there's something to be excited about there. And I'm not a diehard Yankees fan, but I would say they're my American League team.
With the Astros being my daughter's favorite, I'm really pushing for them.
Yes. So, I mean, lots of sports going on. Hockey season has started.
Yep.
So there is a lot of sports. And it's so easy to fall into just watching sports because there's a game on every night.
Yeah.
Especially if you like multiple sports.
Yep.
There's not a day that goes by that you're not seeing a game.
This is the time of year. There's like a 3-week window where every major sport is going right now.
And then it's like, oh, by the way, all your shows are starting too.
Yes.
And you're like, I don't even know. So we got burned this week because we didn't get to see – we had an open house at my daughter's school. So my son and I didn't get to see Flash last week. And I just assumed that it would be on demand the day after. It isn't.
Oh, boy.
Like, there's some sort of a delay now. So I don't know if they're putting it up right before the new episode airs or something like that. But the CW shows have not been appearing the next day.
Mm.
And I could swear that last year it was, like, the day after the show would appear. And that's not happening this year. So so that's kind of freaking me out a little bit because now it's pushing me even more behind. And I can only keep up with probably, like, two shows at a time. If it wasn't for my son and I watching these shows together, I wouldn't keep up with any shows.
Yeah.
But yeah, overwhelming. So
it
the
is.
Marvel Universe stuff on Netflix, I have completely fallen off of through no other reason than just not enough time.
Yeah, because the Daredevil series was great. Jessica Jones, I finally got through most of that.
I loved
and really
Jessica
liked
Jones.
It.
Loved that series. That was a great, great series. And the Daredevil season was up and down, but the Punisher stuff was awesome. So I'm looking to get back on track with the Punisher. Now let's talk about toys, Matthew.
Yes.
You like toys?
I love toys.
Licensed merch powerhouse Funko has filed a registration statement for a proposed initial public offering of Class A common stock, the company announced. Funko is going public.
That is, if you're a comic book guy, you know how big they are.
The shares are to be traded under the ticker symbol FNKO. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Number of shares and the share price have not been determined. So if those of you wanting to buy into Funko stock, we don't know how much it costs yet. But what was interesting about this article, the company whose sales are nearly the size of the entire comics and graphic novel business has been prepping for an IPO or sales to a strategic acquirer this year. I'm going to read that sentence one more time, Matthew. The company whose sales are nearly the size of the entire comics and graphic novel business.
Mm-hmm. I say Funko saved a lot of small comic conventions because you go around, are there going to be any pops there? Yeah, there's going to be a million of them.
Many people's who listen to this show reaction to that is that they just punched their computer and they would want to fight you for making that statement. I think I might agree with you.
Yeah.
Because what Funko has certainly done. And as I'm sitting here talking to you right now, I'm thinking of the giant Funko display that is in our local comic shop in Enfield that we go to Most Excellent. Yes, absolutely. I think if you're someone who is vending at a comic convention, you get angry when you see the walls of Funko Pops because you know that people are going to be going and spending their money there as opposed to the books that you might be selling at your table or your handcrafted merchandise or things like that. I get that. And that is real. That stuff has crowded out. You know, that's the equivalent of Walmart coming in, you know, and squashing the local businesses. But I think in the bigger picture, you may be right. I think that merchandise is a draw.
It absolutely is. And you're seeing Funko Pops. I mean, their saturation is everywhere.
Everywhere.
Our Walgreens, which makes it even more impressive to say that. Our Walgreens, I found out a little late, had an exclusive Snowtrooper pop. Walgreens, the drugstore.
Right.
And they are now everywhere. You go into Walmart has them, Target has them, Barnes & Noble.
Right.
Their section of pops is bigger than the comic books.
I am so glad that my collector's mentality has not gotten me into that realm. I have steadfastly refused to buy those for myself. Now, I have bought a few for my son. He's probably got 6 or 7 of them. When we go to shows,
that's what he buys.
When they do the, you know, 3 for $20, he'll get, you know, 3 Funkos. We did that at Terrificon this year. But I have been able to stay away from it. But man, when I see the Overwatch Funkos, when I see them for properties that I really, really love, like the horror ones, I think, in fact, I do own a Funko. I own 2 because Parker bought me a Lucio Funko, which is an Overwatch character, because I play that character quite a bit. And my writing partner, Jolene, sent me a Jason Voorhees one.
Yep.
The great thing is, now I don't have to buy them. And I don't have to be tempted by other ones. Like, those were sent to me as gifts. But yes, I can totally see how those become an obsession for people. But it's amazing to me that the numbers that they're doing are almost as much as comics and graphic novel novels combined. That is bonkers.
And the thing is, too, it's not a bad thing. Like, I don't sit there. I mean, I just understand and know that there are, at a show, you're going to get a ton of pop dealers. But at the same time, you know, it's almost like what the shows have become. The shows have become the event. Now, instead of buying the comic book, you're going to go buy the pop. Like, I remember watching somebody go, I just bought a classic Firestorm. And I'm looking at the person and I wanted to say, do you even know who that is?
Yeah.
Because I know you know him from The Flash. So that has really... It's one of those things where it has become more popular than the comics that they are
right. It's transcended the things that they've come from.
Yeah,
yeah. And the hope, though, is that in some ways maybe rekindled interest in some things or gotten people to go check out some things that they got the pop for but don't have the, you know, like the Firestorm thing. Like, oh, I just got this cool Firestorm figure. Now I can go and get the trades of this or get the showcase of, you know, this particular character or something like that. So your hope is that it would feed back into the comics and stuff like that. But I just thought that was mind-boggling that their sales are that big. So, whether that's good news or bad news in your mind, you know, we'll let the listener decide. Let's talk about Big Hero 6, because Big Hero 6 is launching a TV series on November 20th.
I wonder if we're going to be in it.
Disney XD has announced that the upcoming Big Hero 6, the series, will launch on November 20th with Baymax Returns, a one-hour primetime television movie that will air at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Disney XD and Disney Channel. The series premiere won't be until early 2018, but following the debut of the original movie, 2 full-length preview episodes will be available on Disney Now and Disney XD Video On Demand. The series picks up immediately following the events of the Animated Studios Academy Award-winning feature film and continues the adventures and friendships of Hero, a 14-year-old orphaned tech genius, and Baymax, his special plus-sized inflatable healthcare companion. As the new kid at San Francisco Institute of Technology, Hero faces daunting academic challenges at the prestigious nerd school and the social trials of being the little man on campus. And of course it has Honey Lemon, it has Fred, it has Go-Go and Wasabi, and was there anybody else I'm missing? Oh, and Aunt Cass. And so, yeah, so there's a new Big Hero 6 series coming. The crazy thing about that is it took a long time.
It really did. That movie hasn't been out. That came out a long time ago.
Big Hero 6 was amazing.
Yeah.
I loved that. And, you make that joke about Big Hero 6, but back when the comic was – you know, big, we had made an appearance in the comic book as football players.
Yes, we were football players.
Yep.
That was good.
Which was a great moment for us. So
you got to rekindle your past.
Yes, another memory down a secret identity lane, and I didn't have to suffer any knee injuries because of it.
That was pretty good.
So it was perfect. So yeah, so that's pretty cool that that's coming out as well. So that's your news. And now it's time to talk about comics, Matthew. And why don't you start us off with Action Comics?
Yeah, so I was looking as I had my book spread out in front of me, and you can probably hear the lenticular cover.
Oh, I do hear the lenticular cover. Is that the Action Comics
that
one?
That is the Action Comics one. I believe this is the first time in Secret Identity history I have been doing a flagship character from each of the companies. I'm doing a Superman book, and I'm doing a Spider-Man book today.
Maybe we did change the formula for – I think we did.
Yeah.
This is Secret Identity Zero. Yes, that's happening right now, because you are the one who's going to be talking about Spider-Man in a few minutes. But start us off with Superman. People feel comfortable when you're talking about DC Comics.
Yeah. So the Oz Effect Part 3 is the continuation of what is going on in the world of Superman. So Superman has found out that, or he may have not found out, but basically Jor-El has come back and said, hey, when Krypton exploded, I didn't die. The world is a crappy place. This planet sucks. And I want you to come with me and get out of here. And it's really interesting because when he came to Earth, he had shards of kryptonite embedded in his face.
Yep.
So he's scarred up and you see like a little kryptonite embedded in his eye. But when we were thinking about this, or when we were talking about family and how with Arrow in the last episode, when you add a baby or a child to the
or a father
to it, you completely change the dynamic of everything for the good or for the worst. I believe that adding Jonathan made Superman a better character. Simply for plot stories alone, Superman has kryptonite. Superman has another kryptonite, his wife Lois, and he now has another kryptonite that is Jonathan. So anytime you want to pull on Superman and get him, you can bypass Lois right now and go right to Jonathan. And that in this issue is what Jor-El starts to do. He's trying to tell Superman, you need to leave this planet. Get out of here. They don't appreciate you. You and I, we're going to go somewhere else, and we're going to be treated like the royalty that we should on a planet that is kind to one another. And I'm thinking in my head, yeah, just go, dude. Just why would you want to stay here and live with humans because we suck?
At face value, it sounds pretty good.
Yep. So we start out the story with a guy and a girl walking into the Daily Planet, and she kisses him on the cheek and says, be brave. And then you open the door and he starts talking about the fact that he is tired of the media telling these stories and lying about things, and he is going to do something about it. He is there to blow up the Daily Planet because he's got a vest full of bombs.
Oh.
And while this is going on, you have everybody in there. You've got Jonathan is visiting. You've got Perry, Jimmy, Lois. Everyone is there. So Superman now is going to be confronted with the fact that he's got his whole family tied up in this hostage situation. So with this starting up, you now go to the Fortress of Solitude, where Superman is kind of freaked out that Jor-El could get in there because it's only a DNA encrypted thing. Obviously, he
kind of lends legitimacy to the fact that this may, in fact, be Jor-El.
And it's not a hard thing to go on by saying that this could easily be the Jor-El from any one of the 52 universes that live in the DC world, that this could have been a what if Jor-El survived and instead of going to the right planet in his world, he came to this one.
Sure.
So that's pretty much where I'm thinking this all is.
I think that's a good place for you to start from.
Yeah. So he is like complaining. He's like, look, I'm your father. You need to understand I've only got what's best, your best interest at heart. And I want to do this and I want to take care of this. And he tells the little robot, Kellex, he tells Kellex to show Clark a little bit about what's going on. And you're sort of seeing a little bit of a little snippet of what is going on in the world right now. Now, this book is brought to you by Dan Jurgens, who's the writer and breakdown artist, Victor Bogdanovich, who does the pencils. And the inks are by Trevor Scott. And I can't even read the last one because it is in a – Mike Spicer does the letters in this one as well. I'm sorry, he's a colorist. And then you've got Bob Lee who does the letters. Sometimes when, and to let everybody know, we record, it's lit, but there's kind of a shadowy area. And if the print is bad enough, Brian and I are both to the point where we can't even help each other out with a far road sign because we're squinting like crazy.
And 799 episodes in, Matt, that is not, people know that now.
Yeah.
And they're not expecting that to change anytime soon.
So Suit Cal is getting a sort of snapshot of everything that is going on in the world right now. The place that he tried to save that ended up killing a bunch of innocents. And now he's looking at Jor going, I've got to go. I'm needed. He goes, you're always needed. This is what I'm trying to show you. There are 19
take a day off
different
of work,
things.
Bro. You're always working.
Tons of things going on right now. You can't fix them all.
Yeah.
And now your family's involved in one of them. So how does that make you feel?
You got to leave work at work, man.
Yep.
When you're in the Fortress of Solitude, it's chill time.
And he's telling him, he goes, you know what? I need to go. I need to take care of this. And there's nothing that you can do to change that. And he takes off. And then Jor-El goes, do not be sure of that, my son.
Uh-oh.
So all of a sudden, you go back to the
Daily Planet.
Daily Planet, where if you remember, Brian, I introduced to you a former football hero named Steve, who does the sports at the Daily Planet.
Yes, you did. I do remember that.
He's trying to impress Jonathan. Jonathan's like, I don't know who you are.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, he decides with this guy here with the bomb suit, who pulls out a gun, he is going to jump from behind the desk and basically sack him and save the day. But when he jumps across the table, he gets shot. And I don't mean to laugh, but it's kind of funny because
it's like that Die Hard scene.
Yep. He's like, there ain't nothing you can do to stop from getting in front of me. I don't lose. And then he gets shot. And he's laying there. And Lois is like, you need to stop this. He goes, I'll tell you what I'll do. You and I will go in the other room. We will do an interview. You could say everything you need to say. I won't edit you. And then when you're done, I will hit publish and it'll go right to the website at least. So we can get your manifesto out there. And he's like, what stunt are you going to pull? And he's like, I'm not going to pull a stunt. Meanwhile, you go to the place where there was the place where this whole thing kind of started, where a country, and I believe it's in Africa, where medicine was taken off of a truck to get to the poor people that were suffering there. And you've got their own government that is like, yeah, let's just blow them up. So they're shooting missiles at him. Superman shows up and stops the missiles from falling. And now everybody has evacuated the Daily Planet except for Lois and this dude. And Jonathan is down there with his Uncle Perry, which I love to death.
Yep.
And Perry's like, look, you know, we got to protect your mother. We got to take care of all this stuff. But the only way we can protect her is by getting down here. Perry turns around and Jonathan is now gone. So Jonathan's
not part of the plan.
Going to go protect his mother. So what is super cool in this is that as soon as you realize that he is missing, you see something go flying through the window upstairs to attack this guy. And he punches the guy with the bomb through the window, who blows up outside the window. And then Lois is – and then the caped person goes, hello, Lois. And she goes, you're not Superman. And then she goes, uh-oh. And you turn the page and you see that it is Jor-El.
Oh.
So Jor-El left the Fortress of Solitude while Superman was going out there. And here is the interesting thing. If you need your husband to do something, like I have a friend that has been kind of pushing me to go into a certain job,
uh-huh,
go leave Amazon and go somewhere. I've already said, you know what? I'm really happy there. I'm not going to do it. So this person now does the next best thing, starts working on Amy, starts working on my wife, saying, hey, you know what? This is what I could offer your husband. And she's like, well, you know, he really is happy there. I really think, you know, and so it's kind of a playful thing. It isn't like a malicious thing here in my life. It's sort of kind of funny. But in this is very manipulative because he knows that the only way he's going to get Superman out of here is to get Lois on his side. So she goes, you know, I'm your father-in-law, Lois. Hello, I'm Jor-El. So now the two of them are talking, and Jonathan is now donning the Superboy costume, leaps up to the Daily Planet. You go back and you see Superman is stopping all the missiles from falling and killing all these people. And as they blow up, you see the army is now, like the army below that was going to get blown up, now is angry, so they start shooting at Superman. So Superman is seeing that sometimes these civil war things that happen in different countries are not as black and white as we like to be. And that every time you align yourself with one team, it is not the right. But you also see the guys on the other side all have the Oz logo tattooed on their neck. So now you go back to Lois and Jor-El having this conversation where he's like, she's like, you can't be Jor-El. He died on Krypton. And he's like, you know, Cal said the same thing. He tells her what happens and what's going on. And he's very kind with her. And he's like, look, the timing has to be now. We need to get out of here. We need to do this. I want my son to be in my life and I want you to be in his. And he's like, wait a minute. He's here. And then he takes off. And everybody goes back upstairs to see what's going on. And you see that now that Lois might not be easily manipulated, he's going after Jonathan. And he sees Jonathan, and Jonathan's like, who are you? And he's like, guess what? I'm your grandfather. This is going to be awesome. So now he's telling him the whole story about everything. And he's like, I see your past. I see your present. And I also see your future. And he's showing Jonathan him as Superman. And he goes, is that really me? And he goes, that is you in your new home. So he starts manipulating him. He brings him back to the Fortress of Solitude, and he is showing him a perfect world, a perfect life. And this is the interesting part where all of a sudden my heart did a little bit of a flutter. He says, here he goes, because on the world of I'm speaking of, no one has to know, no one has to hide who they really are.
Uh-oh.
And you turn the page and you see everybody in sort of those Legion of Superhero costumes. So you've got like all of this where, and I'll show you, Brian, really quick, but you see that.
Whoa.
So Jonathan is looking up going, holy crap, that's what I want. And that is where this issue ends. And it says, next, the fight for Superboy's soul. So I love that Jonathan is such a major part in this. What I do not like is right now, he has become every single plot device in everything. When Superman was kind of going bad, Jonathan was the one. When the devil came to steal everybody, Jonathan was the one.
Right.
All these things are starting to kind of turn Jonathan into the damsel in distress.
Right.
That I don't like because this is a great story so far. And if we haven't had all these other ones where Jonathan was the focal point of manipulation, I would not be so angry. I would look at this as one of the best Superman stories in an awful long time because right now it is. I'm really enjoying this one. And there was an ad in here, Brian, I will mention really quick, for a new series about the Jetsons. So we're going to have that
one. I'm assuming it's a limited series as like the other one, because the other ones were limited series, right?
I have no
idea. I know Flintstones went like 12 issues.
Yeah, it doesn't say anything about limited, but we have a cover by Amanda Connor, written by Jimmy Palmiotti, art by Pierre Brito.
Nice.
So fired up about that one. And then the Doomsday Clock ads are starting.
I saw that.
Which I'm very excited about.
So we are going to go over to Marvel now and talk about Ms. Marvel, which is a book that I have not talked about for a while on the show, but I finally caught up on. So I wanted to talk about it because one of the earliest stories, and this book is written by G. Willow Wilson. Marco Faiella is the artist. Ian Herring does the colors. Joe Caramagna letters. And the editor is Sana Aminat. Now, early on in Ms. Marvel's run, there was a storyline about like a new real estate company that had moved into town and they were essentially kind of trying to take over the neighborhood, and Kamala figured out that they were basically up to no good and sort of drove them out of town. However, the person that was behind all of that basically became the new mayor by some legal decree, like basically got the old mayor kicked out, became the new mayor, and put in place this new security force in Jersey City that the acronym is KIND, but it is, I forget what it stands for. Oh, it is the Keepers of Integration, Normalization, and Deference Agency, KIND. And so this security force has basically gone around and started rounding up anyone who's an inhuman or a mutant or who has any kind of superpowers. And they have been basically putting a smear campaign together against Ms. Marvel, saying that none of the bad stuff in Jersey City was happening until you showed up. And now all of these superheroes from the New York area are coming into Jersey City and they're tearing the place up. And we just want life to go back to the way that it was. So you can see that obviously some of this stuff is pretty topical that they're trying to cover in here. But for Kamala, what it has become is that there are friends of hers. Her family members are getting caught up in this. Her brother gets mistaken for an inhuman and gets rounded up as one of the people that gets swept up in this whole thing. And as Kamala is trying to sort of bring order back to the city and fight against this, she finds out that one of the people helping the bad guys is a kid that she went to school with. And so in the last issue, the two of them were fighting and she ripped off the dude's mask and it's this guy, Josh. And he was someone who ended up becoming a bad guy after they had been involved in this whole situation with earlier. And she's trying to say to him, holy cow, how could you possibly do this? And he's like, you don't know me. You don't know who I am. And so she takes off her mask and she shows him that it's her. And he's like, holy crap, Kamala. He's like, I guess some part of me knew, but I never really came to grips with the fact that you were Ms. Marvel. And she's like, I thought we were friends. How is this happening? And he kind of says to her, look, we were never friends. The two of us were never friends. And whatever you think you knew about me is wrong and no one understands me and I lost everything and these guys basically gave me an opportunity to become a part of something bigger and that's why I'm helping them. And his code name is Discord. He's kind of sort of a martial art. Yeah, it's kind of on the nose, right? But he sort of has like these energy-based powers and stuff. And so as the two of them are talking, they're sort of in this room of the building that Ms. Marvel is being chased around in. And she's at a point now where she's been fighting so long, she's near exhaustion. But this kid, Josh, ends up saying to her, look, we can't change the roles that we have now. This is now who I am. This is now what I'm a part of. But I can give you a head start. So I'm going to let you get out of here and I will make some excuse, but go, just get out of here. And so he lets her escape. And in escaping, she kind of gets out of the building and she is just running down the street and is kind of near collapsing from exhaustion. And then meanwhile, you have Nakia and one of her other friends who have basically went and got like an injunction against this new mayor who essentially took this post illegally. And so they are starting a protest and they are coming to the place where this battle has been happening and where all these kind agents have set up and are saying that you guys are now in violation of the law and we are here to get all of our family members back and get all of our friends back and all this kind of stuff. So this sort of political battle and legal battle is brewing outside while in the meantime, you have Ms. Marvel who is just trying to figure out a way to fight the bad guys, collapsing from exhaustion. She's like, I just need help right now. I need somebody to show up. And who shows up but Lockjaw?
Love Lockjaw.
Lockjaw, because Ms. Marvel's an Inhuman. Mm-hmm. So Lockjaw teleports in and she's like, look, I need you to get me somewhere where I can get something to eat really quick because like my energy level's so low. She kind of has like a flash thing going on.
Yeah.
Where she has to consume a certain amount of calories and stuff. So she ends up going to a local Mediterranean joint and she shows up with Lockjaw. And when she shows up and says, you know, I really need, you know, can you get me this? Can you guys make me this? They end up giving her all of this food and basically saying like, you're going to stop these bad guys, right? Because we need to get these guys out of town and we love you and we want you here. And it was kind of the first time in this story arc that she is feeling like she hasn't been a curse
yeah.
upon Jersey City, because that's what this group was making her out to be, as someone who brought bad things to. And we see the storyline play out in Arrow. We've seen it in you know, these TV shows, The Flash, that kind of stuff, where, well, the metahumans didn't show up until you showed up. And now, because of you, more people mm-hmm. are coming here. And it, Batman, we've seen that theme play out. But for Ms. Marvel, like, Jersey City is her home. And now she's sort of being accused of bringing all these problems to it. And so, but what the storyline is really about is people getting swept up in the moment of like, yeah, I want to make things back to the way they used to be. And because of that, we're going to kick all these people out and stuff like that. And so she ends up getting re-energized. She ends up going back to fight against Discord and this other, who I think her name is Overload or something like that. She ends up fighting against them. But her friends and the people that she knows that went and got this injunction, they have, and the former mayor have all been able to overturn this situation legally. And so the cops end up showing up and they have to end up arresting all of these agents of kind and all this kind of stuff and taking them out of there. But even though the storyline kind of ends in a happy place where, you know, the bad guys have been defeated and this sort of more divisive element has been taken out of Jersey City now, where Kamala is at the end of this issue is kind of remarking like, yeah, you know, it seems like we sort of won the day this time, but what we kind of can't take back now is this whole sort of neighbor against neighbor thing that just cropped up in this. And so what she learned is that when a little bit of, you know, friction came along, neighbor started turning on neighbor. And so it kind of leaves you with this sort of bittersweet taste after the storyline of like, yeah, we kind of see that now, right? I mean, when you think about like when it comes to politics or yep. when it comes about some of the news in the world, like, you can be on a different side of an argument from someone, but we see every day people's turning on each other. You know, people that we know turning on each other. You yeah. probably see it play across your Facebook page where
oh,
you have
yeah.
two people that you know and are friends with, and all of a sudden now they hate each other because they got in some heated argument yep. about something. And so it's kind of sad how right now, with the way that the world is, we're so quick to turn on one another. And that's kind of where she is coming out of this, is that like once you have had that happen, it's very difficult to come back from that.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to be able to put that aside and say, well, you know, that was heated and that was sort of in the heat of the moment. And, you know, that doesn't change my particular outlook on that person. It kind of does after that. And so that's sort of where the book. So they're covering some pretty heavy stuff in this, which they've done since the beginning of Ms. Marvel's run, but still able to also keep that core of what I think is great about early Spider-Man stories of, you know, Kamala struggling with high school and struggling with her own identity and struggling with where she fits in and struggling within feeling like she's not appreciated and then tackling these bigger issues as well. So Ms. Marvel continues to be a book that I think really just is one of the best books out there right now.
And is that going to continue?
I believe it is going to continue. Good. I don't know if the numbering is going to change, but I don't think Ms. Marvel's going anywhere anytime soon.
Oh, good. So my book is an odd one for me. It is The Amazing Spider-Man 789. The reason I picked this one up is that this is basically the first issue of Spider-Man in the Legacy World. And the arc that we're going in right now is called Fall of Parker. And you've got an Alex Ross cover where it's Peter. It's a picture of Peter that says, Peter Parker, threat or menace? Which obviously is a play on the original one where it was Spider-Man, threat or menace. So Alex Ross did that one, that cover. The book is written by Dan Slott. Stuart Immonen is the penciler. His usual inker, Wade Von Graubadger, is working with him again. Joe Caramagna does the letters. Marty Gracia, the colorist. And there are, again, a ton of variant covers. But one that's interesting that I wished I would have seen is Steve Ditko and Michael Kelleher. Now, Michael lives right down the street from us here in Springfield. And Michael did one of the covers for my Monkey See Sea Monkey.
Oh, yeah.
The one with the sea monkeys attacking. So I really wished I could have found that one. And if I do find it, then I will be picking that one up. And when I was at New York Comic Con, I kind of wish that all these books were out then because I would have loved to have gotten the lenticular covers of all of these books, much like I did for Legacy and Spirit of Vengeance.
Was it?
And they're the same price.
Oh, are they really?
That's
I didn't know that
is really kind of interesting about this whole thing. So as you have mentioned in the past episodes of Secret Identity, Peter Parker was in charge of Parker Industries, and it is now gone by the wayside. It is folded and crashed and done because Peter had to do that in order to basically save the world from Doc Ock getting all sorts of technology that he could have used to destroy the world. And the only way to have stopped it is to basically destroy the main computers that held all the information that they needed. So in doing so, the whole company toppled and fell apart. So Peter right now, sadly, Peter Parker's legacy in the Marvel Universe is the lovable loser. And we start out right now with him being...
Which is really where a lot of people...
He should be.
Kind of want that to be, you know? And again, we know that this whole legacy is sort of returning some of the characters to their more traditional places in the Marvel Universe.
And he stopped being the lovable loser the day he married Mary Jane, which is where a lot of people lost all of that. But then when people came in, that was always the accepted part of Peter's legacy, was being married to Mary Jane.
Well, and that's the thing. To me, it's like the Wally West, Barry Allen
thing.
Like if you came in during the time of the marriage, then to you, the marriage is the status quo. And that's why One More Day was such a heinous event for people who grew up with the two of them being together. And then for people who are older school fans than that, maybe they were fine with that change and felt like it was for the better.
So he is now – Peter is now staying because he doesn't have a place to stay. He's staying at Bobby Morris's apartment, a.k.a. Mockingbird.
Right.
So he and Mockingbird are having a little bit of a relationship.
Yeah, and I think in the new – as we move forward, that is something they're going to explore a little bit more.
Yep. So she's in the apartment and she's like, hey, Peter, how you doing? He's like, eh. And she goes, hey, you know what? You've been here for about a week and you haven't done anything. You've just been sitting there. So Peter right now is kind of falling into a little bit of a depression. And you see that this is a very nice apartment that she lives in, very well kept. And she's like, look, I've got to leave right now, but you got to pick up your dirty clothes. You got to pick stuff up around here. We don't have a maid and this is not good. And you see him put up the okay sign with his fingers from below the couch. And then she's leaving. He's like, what, a goodbye kiss? And she goes, how about you take a shower first?
Right.
And then she leaves.
You're not very kissable right now.
And then when you turn angles of the shot, you have Peter sitting on a couch with a blanket in like a nasty t-shirt, jeans that are all dirty, and the table is just loaded with crap. And he's saying, so this time it's me, Peter Parker, ex-billionaire CEO, world's biggest loser.
Yep.
So we're going right back into that one.
There's the Pete we know.
Yep. So Harry Osborn is calling him. And he's not answering it. He's not listening. He puts on the TV And the TV is talking about the fact that every single article or every single news story is about the fall of Parker Industries and how it is having massive effects here and there and here and there. Now, for Peter, he could easily just come out and say, hey, you know what? I'm really Spider-Man. I did this to save the entire world. And it might be a little more palatable. But for the most part, he destroyed his company. And all people do is look at him as being a loser that destroyed his own company. He lost billions. So he turns off the TV because he's getting really sick and tired of hearing about this. He's hearing people talking about how they lost their jobs, how companies – and I think about this like with Amazon, that if the company went under, all these buildings that we've built everywhere, there's a lot of people that are going to – they would obviously sure. lose their jobs. But then you think about the infrastructure all around it.
Oh, absolutely.
We joke around all the time because apparently Buffalo Wild Wings are near every single Amazon. And that
oh,
is
really?
A huge staple for us. That is, it's one of those things where I always joke around thinking, man, if we ever closed, Buffalo Wild Wings is going to go out of business. And they're opening up a new building in North Haven about the size of our building. So we're joking around as we're looking at the
Wait
map going, hey, where's the Buffalo Wild Wings going to go in down there?
I wonder if Circuit City is responsible for the downfall of Ruby Tuesdays.
Oh, you know what?
Huh.
We'll do it. We called it. We claimed it.
I think we have to do some investigative journalism there.
That'll be on our new podcast. We solve the mysteries that you don't care about.
Right, right. Meaningless connections or like.
So another cool thing in here is that Peter's like, well, I'm going to escape the news. So he picks up the Daily Planet or the Daily Bugle and he opens up the main front page and he looks through it. And you see a great shot of him looking through the cut.
Oh, nice.
Because you're thinking, oh, Mockingbird just tried to save him a little bit of pain. But she didn't. She put it right up on the refrigerator. And it says, Peter Parker, threat or menace. And the little letters, the magnetic letters that are holding it up, ha, ha, ha. So she's kind of rubbing
busting
it
his chops.
You open up the fridge and all the food that says, hi, not Peter's, not Peter's, not Peter's. And so she doesn't want him to touch the food. So you go back and you see the home of Harry Osborn. So Harry's got his son. Is that Normie? Or no, who's?
Yes.
Yeah, Normie. So Normie's sitting on his lap and Harry's like, come on, Peter, it's me again. You got to pick it up. Look, I know you're upset, but we got a party going on and you need to come out. You need to see your friends. We need that. So he is, you see that now he's, who's he married to? Is it Liz or is it, who's Emma?
Emma. I don't know off the top of my head.
Oh, dear, Emma. Oh, no, Emma might be another kid. Oh, I don't know. Is Emma the babysitter? Yes. So he takes the kid away, and now you have – is it – oh, geez, this is where I'm going to get confused. But I thought it was Liz that he was married to.
Well, he was, but they're not together anymore, I don't think.
Oh, so it is Liz.
Oh, okay.
So Liz and him, that's – okay, thank you for saying that because – they've just talked about the fact that they're trying to rekindle their marriage. They're
okay.
trying to get back together because they're saying, hey, so we've got this party for Flash tonight. Is it going to be weird if the two of us show up considering we have kind of split the people? We've split our friends.
Yep.
Now we're back together. Do you think this is going to cause a problem? And they're like, and he's like, no, I think that, you know, we need to do that. I think it's a good opportunity for us to see our friends. So you're seeing how everybody, it's like Seinfeld. When George was up, Elaine was down, and vice versa. You're seeing that everybody's fortunes are now back on the upswing.
It's the yin and the yang.
As Peter, yeah, and Peter's got a big yang because it's everybody's on the up.
That's going down as one of the all-time.
Yes, there we go.
Yeah.
We're going to go out fighting.
We'll just move on from that.
So you have, now you have at the Daily Bugle, Peter walks in and has the newspaper going, threat or menace? Are you guys serious? How can you say that? I want to talk to Robbie. And you got Robbie going, oh, for the love of Pete. And he goes and he's like, hey, Peter, what's going on? And he goes, look, we put that story together. The writer did what he needed to do. I might not have agreed with the headline, but you know what we do here. We need to sell papers. And he goes, so if you want to talk, why don't we go talk like men? And Peter does not want any of that. He's like, look, he's trying to just blast him in front of everything. And then they finally go into another office and he goes, here is the problem that I have with this whole thing that you're getting upset about. You're a man who let millions of employees and shareholders around the world lose their jobs. He goes, I wrote that story, Peter, because it's all true. And then Peter's like, you're right. He goes, I'm kind of feeling sorry for myself. That was completely wrong of me. And he goes, no, I've become this. I've become the pariah. This is what I've done. And then he looks over at the kid that's working at the desk, and he's talking about, hey, you know what? When you're working on a story, you need to have this, you need to have that, you need to have that. And you've got what's his name?
Robbie.
Robbie is watching the whole thing, and Robbie's going, wow, maybe we got to bring Peter back. Maybe this might be a good
insight. Well, remember, he lost a job for doctoring photos.
Yes.
That was the big controversy.
Yep. So now Peter's out on the streets in New York, and he's walking around, and somebody walks up going, hey, are you really that Parker guy, the one who closed down his thing? My sister worked for Parker Industries. Now she's out of a job. And now everybody is turning around and attacking him. So he starts running down the street, hiding from this mob that's going to get him. They walk into the alley. He's not there. And then for the first time in this whole issue, you remember that Peter Parker is Spider-Man because he's up with his hood over his head blocking everything, and he's up on the wall just kind of in that classic crouch pose looking down at everybody. And now you go to Flash's party, and everybody is there. Aunt May is there. Mary Jane is there. They're all singing happy birthday to Flash. Flash is standing there, and he's got like his gazelle legs because he lost his legs during the war. And he's talking to Aunt May, and he's like, look, you know, I'm really sorry about what's going on with Peter, and I'm also sorry that I missed Jay's funeral. And she goes, I know. And he goes, look, I was a little busy. I was pretty far away. My life. And then you see the little thing saying, actually, he was off Earth as Venom Space Knight. So you got kind of caught up on that right. little bit. Everybody's talking, and they're like, wow, I can't believe that Peter messed all of this up. And how Peter did this. And people are like, some people are giving him slack saying, you know, you got to understand Peter. He's a good kid. If something happened, it might have been for a reason. And everybody is talking about Peter. And then Mary Jane is saying, you know, maybe he just didn't want to come be here and ruin the party for everybody. Poor Petey. And that is where you see Peter is outside the door listening to this whole thing. And he goes back to the apartment and he is just laying on the couch. And Mockingbird comes in. She's ready to go out and do some police, and she's like, look, you need to come with me. You need to get out of here. So they go out and they find the A-list villain, the Griffin, out there destroying Times Square, knocking things around, busting up cops. They get down there and they start attacking. And then all of a sudden, people kind of start turning on him, much like they did in the old days.
Yep.
Saying, you know, you're doing all this stuff, but you know what? You're just as bad as him because look at the damage that you're causing. So Peter is now running into the situation again where loser at school, loser in the public eye
right.
as far as Spider-Man goes. So they end up taking down the Griffin. I was thinking after, who's the other one? Who's the other bad monkey one? There's a monkey. I forgot his name. Another monkey that begins with G. Can't think of the name, but there's a...
You're not talking about Grodd.
No. There's like a really bad, like a species of monkey that is not really the coolest of any of the monkeys. I'll remember it like about 7 o'clock tonight.
Sure. Well, we have one episode left for you to figure it out. So if you do, you have to come back for that one.
So they save the day. Everybody's kind of like, and then all of a sudden everybody's like, Spidey. So they go up to the apartment and he's like, whoa, did you hear that? Everybody was kind of liking me. And she's like, yeah, you just got to get out there. And then she gives him a can of soda, takes off the tag that says, you know, it's hers. And she goes, here, you deserve this. So then they start kissing, and that is how this issue ends. Then you have the coming soon in the pages of Amazing Spider-Man. A lot of stuff I'm looking forward to. Heating up a heated argument between Spidey and the Human Torch, the relationship between Mockingbird, and then the Venom will show up. But what Venom will it be? Eddie Brock and – or what? Wait a sec. Is that Venom with Eddie Brock and Flash Thompson? So you see the Venom –
Well, the Venom series is going strong because you know they're doing the whole Venom movie thing. So that's why you're seeing – I mean, we just saw that in Renew Your Vows. We saw that with the Venomverse event that's going on. And then the Venom series proper has returned to its original legacy numbering as well, adding together all the miniseries and coming out to over 150 issues. So Venom is going to be a big part of the landscape of the Spideyverse for sure.
Yep. And then you also have a little three-page origin – basically of Spider-Man. So if this might have been your first issue, you're getting the origin and you're getting the classic origin. You're getting all of that stuff in there. Robbie Thompson was the writer on that one. Mark Bagley did the pencils. So a great, great, great issue. I would share a code with everybody, but Brian, I decided to enter the digital age and I downloaded that into my iPad.
You used it for yourself.
Yep, because I wanted to see if I could read a comic and like it.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Well, now it's time for our Out of the Long Box. And this week, I'm going to Comixology for a book that came out in 2000, and it is called Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose, because it's Halloween season, Matthew.
Yes.
This, of course, is written and created by Jim Ballant, creator, writer, artist, and graveyard guardian. He calls himself. Holly Golightly is the colorist and letterer on this one as well. And so I knew nothing about this, except obviously I was very familiar with Jim Ballant's run on Catwoman.
Yes.
And so, which I have, I think, most of his run on Catwoman. And so I figured I'd check this one out because it'd be a good Halloween read. And turns out this book is a lot of fun. It starts off by saying two books were created centuries ago when they tied my ancestors to stakes and buried them alive and burned them alive, not buried them alive, all because we were proud enough to call themselves witches. And so you have a descendant of the basically witches from the time of the Salem witch trials who is talking about the fact that there were two books that were created. One book was filled with spells of light and harmony, while its darker twin bound in leather and chains possessed the sorcery of destruction and abomination. The High Witches deemed it forbidden, and no one was to use it. The books were given to the Witches of the Black Rose to hide from a world of persecution. They remained safe and unopened for centuries, Matthew, until now.
Wow. Till now.
One witch betrayed her coven and stole the forbidden book from the archives. Raven Hex, my sister, is that witch. So Taro, who is the hero of this series, her sister Raven is the one that stole this book. She's obsessed with punishing man for his crimes against witchkind and ushering in a new age of magic, a black dawn with the land under witch's rule. And so she has stolen this book. She has conjured these evil creatures, and she is a threat to the world. And so her sister is going to stop her. And so now we see Tarot, and she is saying, I have consulted the tarot cards, and she's in Witch Hollow in Salem, Massachusetts, to find my sister's location, but my sight is blurred by her sorcery. All the cards show me is the oncoming blackness of a dark warrior and a dark warrior standing in its midst. He is shrouded in heroics. And so apparently she's going to meet somebody that's going to help her defeat her sister and get back this evil book that they can once put again into safekeeping and sort of save the world. But she doesn't know who that is yet. And so she is walking around in this building in Witch Hollow, which I'm assuming is sort of her headquarters. And she's saying, in order to get ready for this battle, I got to get armored up. I've foreseen my sister's darkness that awaits me. I'll need more than just my spells and robes to confront it. And so she goes and puts on the witch's armor, which has all of these symbols and sigils and everything. And this is probably a good time to mention that if you've seen Jim Ballant's run on Catwoman, he is certainly someone who is, I think, probably well known for his portrayal of the female figure.
Yes.
Is that safe to say? And this book coming out around 2000 reminds me a lot of the mid-90s books of your Lady Death and stuff like
Chastity,
that.
It's definitely all of
that
stuff.
There's a good amount of, I would say, cheesecake in this book. And while it doesn't seem to be the complete focus of the book, he certainly doesn't shy away from that. So you have Taro, who goes and dons her witch armor, and now she is ready to go out and take care of her sister. She also has a familiar that is a combination of a cat and a bat, which is kind of cool looking. And so now we are on October 29th near downtown Salem, where you have a couple of guys who are going around vandalizing. Now, my understanding was that was supposed to happen on the 30th.
Yeah, Cabbage
October,
Night.
Cabbage Night, which I also found out not everyone calls Cabbage Night.
What do they call it?
I forget what the other names for it are, but that is a regional thing.
We have always called
it Cabbage Night here. The night before Halloween, where people go out and throw eggs at houses and toilet paper trees and all that other kind of stuff and do what these gentlemen are doing. I'm not saying that I did any of those things.
No.
I'm just saying that that was what – and now even as adults, we have to prepare for it, right? So you know that on the 30th of October, you don't leave your pumpkins out on the front step. You make sure to get that stuff inside because – you never know. And if you walk outside the next morning and someone threw an egg at the back of your car, then you're not totally surprised because it was cabbage night.
Yep.
So you got a couple of guys out here smashing pumpkins and doing worse than that, painting on people's windows and stuff like that. He's like, this place was just asking for it. Nobody's home, lights off, easy pickings. And so they end up upsetting a gentleman who has a baseball bat and is now chasing them down an alley, and they get away from that guy and they're kind of laughing. Oh, yeah, yeah, we're out there, you know, wrecking stuff and breaking stuff. But then they find themselves in a dark alley and they get attacked by two of the summoned creations of the Sister of Tarot. With her dark magic, she has summoned these jack-o'-lantern creatures that basically grab these guys and kidnap them and take them away. Now, meanwhile, you have Taro, who is still getting ready to go out and sort of get into battle, and she's taking with her the Sword of the Black Rose, which is sort of the magical sword of this particular order of witches, and she is consulting with her mother and saying, and her mother saying, do you want me to go with you? You know, clearly the daughter has now become the main warrior of this group, but the mother saying, you know, you might not be able to do this alone. And she's saying, no, I have to. She's my sister. I got to go out and do this. So we see elsewhere that the two gentlemen that were kidnapped have been brought to the lair of Hex. And so as they get there, she's saying, I am the queen of the new witcharchy, the empress that will rule over the land with sorcery and might. The reign of mankind is at an end. Witchcraft will take its rightful place and everyone will bow before the name Raven Hex. That's her name. And so she's got them there and she is going to, at first probably kill them, but then she says, you know what? I have a mission for you two. You two knuckleheads are going to go out and do this for me. Don't fail me or I will kill you. And so they send, she sends them to a graveyard because she wants them to retrieve the corpse of a particular, being. And so they get sent to the graveyard and they're digging up a grave and they're looking for this coffin. And you see that the grave that they're digging up looks like a set of Siamese twins. And so she, the spirit of these twins goes and finds a guardian of the graveyard who apparently is a superhero that, that guards the graveyard and protects graves from being disturbed. And so he gets alerted to this and he goes and finds these guys that are digging up the grave and ends up battling them. And he's got quite an interesting costume as well. It's kind of like a costume that is Venom-esque, except it's a skeleton on the outside. And he's saying, you know, put the coffin back and leave this place. You can't disturb the spirits here. And he's going to fight these guys. And so he starts battling them. And there's three of them now that he has to deal with. And as they are battling him physically, he says, let me introduce you to my silent partners. And he summons up a bunch of the spirits that live in the graveyard, and they come after these guys as well. But one of the jack-o'-lantern creations of Raven Hex ends up grabbing the coffin that these guys were sent to retrieve and taking it. And so this guy now, the graveyard guardian, is finding that he can't fight two battles at once, and he's getting a bit overwhelmed. And that is when who shows up but Taro, Witch of the Black Rose. She shows up with her sword. She starts slashing these jack-o'-lantern things. The two of them are fighting together. They kind of have a team up. It's a really tough battle. But unfortunately, even though they win the battle, one of the creatures gets away with the coffin that this guy was sworn to protect. And so now he has to team up with Taro, and they both have to go after her sister, Raven. And as the book winds down, you see that they come into contact for the first time, and there is this moment between the two of them where they realize that, almost like Hawkman and Hawkwoman, where they have this sort of historical lifetime mm-hmm. after lifetime connection, that she kind of feels that they have this connection and he kind of feels it too, but neither one of them kind of know what to do with that. And so that's kind of how the first issue ends, with the two of them sort of realizing that they have this connection and that it's important to whatever it is that they're going to have to do. So definitely a book that was a fun read. It absolutely reminds me of that mid-90s kind of stuff where it is horror-themed with some cheesecake as well, kind of all mixed together. It definitely had kind of a Lady Death sort of feel to me, but a lot of fun. And Jim Ballant's artwork is
amazing.
Amazing.
He is amazing.
Absolutely
talent.
Amazing. Character design is, I think, for the times, certainly fits with everything else that we were seeing at that time, but really, really kind of fun. And I believe that at least the first like 12 issues of Tarot, the Witch of the Black Rose, are available on Comixology Unlimited. So if you pay that $6 a month to be able to read from a lot of different series, there's a whole bunch of tarot that's on there. So it's definitely worth checking out.
And it's a book that is still going now.
I believe so. It's like well over 100 issues now.
Yeah, he's, you know, Jim Ballant is definitely not somebody that adheres to a schedule.
Uh-huh.
So if you are, like, you could start now and within a year catch up to every single book that's come out.
Okay.
Because like you'll go 6-7 months at a time without a book. There are times where the book started to get a little more into the NC-17 world.
Okay.
And then it would come right back. But I've always loved his art. I think the production value. And he's also one of those guys that definitely gets the old school feel for letters pages and being very accessible to,
sure,
to the fans that are out there.
Awesome. Well, yeah, like I said, it's definitely worth checking out. And if you have Comixology Unlimited, you can check it out for free. So there you go. That is your Out of the Long Box for this week. That is going to do it for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew A. Herring, this is Brian Letenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.